Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Monday morning. 251-340-1006. If you have any more texts you want us to get to, we'll try to find time to get to them before the conclusion of today's program. Joining us now on the line, very pleased to bring on my next guest, who I think is likely the next state auditor. But for the meantime, we'll call him Representative, State Representative Andrew Sorrell of Muscle Shoals. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Thanks, Jeff. I'm doing real well. I actually just got back from your area. We were down there in Orange Beach for a couple of days this weekend, so just returned home.
Hey, well, glad you made it down. We do appreciate the contribution to our tax structure down here. But anyway, obviously joking there. Representative, the campaign you're in right now, you look pretty good, but I assume you're still doing some blocking and tackling out there.
Yeah, so two quick comments. First of all, yes, I was actually contributing to y'all's economy down there. I own a condo in Orange Beach as an investment property, and I just paid my property taxes. So I did donate to the Baldwin County economy there with that. And secondly, yeah, still campaigning. There's not necessarily a whole lot of drama about whether or not I win. I do not have a Democrat opponent. I do have a Libertarian. And I've never had a Libertarian opponent before. The Libertarians did a lot of effort this year to get on the ballot. They spent $250,000 on petitions for ballot access. I heard some marijuana group gave them the money. And anyway, they do have ballot access on a number of races now. And the reason they picked me was because I did not have a Democrat opponent. And the way it works is, you probably know this, but for the benefit of your audience, if a Libertarian candidate gets 20% in a statewide election, then the entire Libertarian Party gets statewide ballot access in the next election. So they're not necessarily trying to win. They're trying to just get somebody to get 20%, whether it's against me or one of the other statewides, so they get that ballot access. They don't have that hurdle to jump in the future.
What do you think of that? They're a Libertarian. So this is kind of what I wanted to talk to you about, that you're not exactly the establishment Republican type of Montgomery. I think that is I think that's a safe statement to make. But you see the Libertarians on there. I mean, is that something that maybe we lack in this state? Do we need that lane in our politics? Do you think it's a good thing the Libertarians are being more active in politics here in the state?
So I agree with some of what the Libertarians believe. I'm with them on fiscal policy, economic policy. I'm not with them on some of their other policies like drugs and things like that. So I am by no means a Libertarian. I would probably never run as a – I wouldn't run as a Libertarian candidate. I am a Republican through and through. But I think what the Republicans need to do in Alabama to prevent the Libertarians from getting a foothold is we need our Republicans to start standing up for liberties like civil asset forfeiture reform that Senator Orr and I got done in 2021. We made a lot of progress. We might have solved half the problem in Alabama. Somebody needs to go back and finish that job. We got constitutional carry done this year. If the Republicans start passing good liberty-based legislation like that, then I don't think we'll ever have the Libertarian Party get a foothold. If the Republicans go soft and start getting too moderate, you do open the door for Libertarian candidates to start coming in and peeling away those Republican primary votes, or excuse me, those Republican votes in the general election. Is something that I am concerned about.
Yeah, whenever we have these discussions about the differences between Libertarian and conservative, it's all social policy, it's culture. That people don't, people think, well, Libertarians just a more vociferous brand of what I believe in, but it's really that. It's drug policy. It's the the cultural norms that we have in our country that conservatives want to preserve. Well, Libertarians don't think we need to be in that game at all. That just forget about that stuff. Let your freak flag fly. And that's like where we got to pump the brakes a little bit when we're making a distinction between a conservative philosophy and a Libertarian philosophy.
Well, you put that really well, and I'll give you another example of a big difference between some Libertarians and most every Republican, and that is abortion. The Libertarian Party is split. Some of them are pro-life, some of them are not, and that's a big distinction. Some people say, well, we don't want the government saying whether or not you can get an abortion. The government shouldn't tell you what to do with your body. It's the opinion of some Libertarians. Well, that's really, really dangerous, because what Libertarians are forgetting is the liberty and freedom of the baby in the womb. It's the ultimate infringement to your liberty for you to be put to death. So I have a strong disagreement with some of the members of the Libertarian Party on the pro-life issue. But on the fiscal issues, we really are 100% on the same page, at least I am. So, for instance, I don't believe in borrowing money. We've got record-setting budgets. Our budgets were up, I think, one was up 11%, one was up 16% this year. Why are we borrowing money when our budgets are up that much? You know, I don't believe in raising taxes. I think, again, we have plenty of revenue in Alabama. No need for us to be raising taxes. And there's really no need for us to be growing government at the pace that we are. And that's something, again, we have a lot of overlap with the libertarians on. So I was quite taken aback when I found out I had a libertarian opponent, because there's probably nobody who leans more that way in the state legislature right now than myself. You know, you used to have your Tripp Pittmans and some of those other ones, but they've moved on. And I was kind of the most libertarian leaning on fiscal policy legislator that there was. So I was very confused why they had challenged me for state auditor. And then I figured out it had absolutely nothing to do with me. The guy I'm running against has never met me. I don't even know if he knows hardly anything about me. All they're after is getting that 20% in a statewide race so they get ballot access in the future. And that's why they picked my race, because they knew I didn't have a Democrat.
Yeah, you see a lot. And I had explained this, that, you know, you see why this race and why that race? And then it's not an ideological thing, but it's just that ballot access in the future. Joined by State Representative Andrew Sorrell here on the program. Andrew, I assume you're still keeping track of what's going on as at the state level, particularly with legislative politics. But what do you think of this? And you won't get to vote on it, but I am curious to hear the surplus, the end of the fiscal year, $1 billion is some change extra in the ETF, that, you know, unanticipated revenue. So the talk is, what do you do with it? Now, Governor Ivey, Arthur Orr, some others have said, hey, let's do a tax rebate. I've heard some talk about tax cuts. I mean, Larry Stutz, your counterpart in the shows there, was on this program, said, we, you know, the way you keep government from growing, we got to look at rolling back some of the taxes that you kind of, you know, maybe not starve the beast, but at least put it on a diet, right?
Yeah, I agree with what Larry Stutz said 100% there. And I've got a real good idea what we could do with an extra $1 billion. We just borrowed $1.5 billion 3 years ago for school construction. And I thought it was completely unnecessary, because the way the ETF was growing, we could have easily allocated $300-$500 million more per fiscal year to paying cash for building those schools if they needed to be built. So I didn't think it was necessary at all to borrow the money. The bill started out at $1.2 billion, but because we got a better interest rate than we bargained for, it ended up being able to borrow $1.5 billion. And the extra $300 million, the way the bill was written, if we got any overage on the bond float, the governor had exclusive authority to spend that money. And you may remember this. This was a big kerfuffle in Montgomery. The governor spent $300 million. And really, that's not the governor's job. It's the legislature's job to appropriate money. But we foolishly put into the bill that the governor had the authority on any excess. So, of course, I didn't vote for that bill because I don't vote for borrowing money. But I say, let's take the $1 billion and let's pay some debt off. Once the debt is paid down, absolutely, slash the tax rate. Because if you just do a rebate, you've only solved the problem for 1 year. If you're collecting too much revenue and you just give it back, that's just a one-year fix. Cutting the tax rate is the only thing that's going to solve that permanently.
Well, this predates you, Representative, but when they did the internet sales tax, the SSUT, the projections, it's clear to me that they underestimated how much revenue that would produce. And I don't know if that was by design necessarily or not. However, every year, wow, look at what we got, the surplus, you know, more money coming in because of the SSUT, and they pat themselves on the back, and it's just great. And I'm not saying, you know, we're a lot better place than we were when I was growing up with proration every other year or whatever, but that the budgeting process, they're not dealing with a very accurate assessment of really what revenues and projections are going to be, I feel like. And that's why we're seeing every year, it seems, some kind of, you know, surplus, which is not a bad problem to have necessarily, but it does suggest the recipe for government expenditures and tax revenues is not quite right, and not really giving us a good idea of how to deal with it.
Well, what happens is we pass a budget that says, hey, our education budget this year is, let's say, $8 billion. But it's really not, because when we have that excess, we come back later and we do a supplemental appropriation for another $800 million. So really, we spent $8.8 billion on education. So the headline is $8 billion. And the supplementals don't even get added on and factored into how fast we're increasing the size of government, because it's a separate bill, much done much later. So there is a big danger there in growing government. But a lot, some of this is because of the way that we budget, which is actually very responsible. The Rolling Reserve Act and everything that was passed, it forces us to not spend 100% of what we project to bring in a year. So it's very common for us to have an overage. And that's fine with me. You know, let's build up a reserve and then let's cut some taxes. Now, going back to what you said on the SSUT, that does predate me in the legislature. But I do remember being very, very involved in that fight, because I owned an internet college textbook company. 90% of our sales were on the internet. So Books a Million, for instance, their owners were lobbying Congressman Brooks to vote for the SSUT. And I was lobbying Congressman Brooks to vote against the SSUT. And it was never a real fair discussion or fight, because the point they were making is, hey, it's not fair these internet guys can sell the same book and not have to charge sales tax. So it's about fairness. We just need to institute the SSUT so it's fair for everybody. And my point was, if we're really trying to make, if this is about fairness and not about a tax increase, we can make it fair without raising taxes. Let's cut the tax rate for brick and mortar retailers from, let's say, 8% to 6.5%. And let's raise the sales tax for internet sellers from 0 to 6.5%. So we're both at 6.5%. It's fair, but we haven't actually raised taxes. But the dirty little secret is, fairness was just the excuse to raise taxes. It was never about being fair. It was always about, hey, we have a really good excuse here to bring in more revenue.
I agree with that. I remember the very specious arguments and going to these trade groups that were really pushing the SSUT at the time. And this is just fairness. It's going to be a big boost to the economy because people will go shop brick and mortar. And that, you know, that leads us to our next point here. Brick and mortar retail, we have high sales taxes in Alabama, particularly a grocery tax. And winding that down, something that's always been talked about. Now, opponents will say this to me, though. Well, if we eliminate ours, who's to say that local municipality won't make up the difference there? But getting to that grocery tax is something I think has got a lot of steam behind it. But you don't feel that it's something that a lot of Republicans are willing to get out in front of.
Yeah, so a couple comments there. You know, a lot of the small town mayors don't understand the grocery tax repeal bill. And I had one of my mayors call me, and he was just very, very upset. How could you support this? It's going to crush towns like mine and everything. And I said, what are you talking about? We're not getting rid of the local sales tax portion for groceries, only the state portion with my bill. Oh, then it made sense to him. But yeah, to your point, what if we cut the state sales tax 4% on groceries, and then the municipalities come in and raise it, you know, 2-4% back on the back end? That needs to be addressed in the bill. That doesn't need to be allowed to happen. That needs to be put in the bill, or that's exactly what's going to happen. You go out of state to, I spent a lot of time in Michigan, got some relatives up in Michigan. You know, they don't pay sales tax on food. And it's amazing how much difference that makes at the grocery store. It's a very noticeable difference when you don't pay that sales tax on food. And we've got plenty of money in the budget. We could easily wipe out the internet sales tax with our increase in the ETF for just 1 year. The amount of extra money flowing into the ETF would more than cover the entire removal of the internet sales tax. My original grocery tax bill phased out the grocery tax over 20 years. Then I thought, hey, the way we're growing, we could phase it out over 5 or 10 years. And now I'm to the point where I say, forget phasing it out, just axe the whole thing. We've got the revenue to cover it.
Last question, Representative. We'll get you out of here on this. The other the hot button topic, the school choice and school choice in Alabama. I don't know how receptive people are up in your area to it, but I could go either way on it. But are you surprised is it all just teachers union? Or I think there's more to it. The opposition to it, or right, doesn't, why Del Mar or Charlotte Meadows aren't able to get any traction. That there's just a lot of people, a lot of your colleagues, or soon to be former colleagues, are just satisfied with their local schools and they don't want to upset it. They're getting pressured by the administrators, the school boards or whatever. But, you know, is there going to come a time when that's something that the state is going to do, you think?
Absolutely. In fact, I think that they're probably going to pass some school choice bill this coming session. I don't know that it'll be as strong as what I would want, but I do think that the political pressure is beginning to build, and that's going to happen. But the 4 years I spent in the legislature, I can tell you, anytime school choice was talked about, my phone would blow up with calls from teachers and administrators and other education bureaucracy members lobbying me against it. And I never heard from parents who were for it. I mean, it was very rare I ever got a phone call for it. Now, if you poll it, then people will say, oh, yeah, I'm for school choice. And I think that they really are. But they don't ever call their legislators and tell them that. And I think that's part of our problem. When you're a legislator, if you only hear from 10 people on an issue and 9 of them are against it, that affects the way you think about that issue. When in reality, it could be 70-30 the other way. They're actually in support of it. The teachers union is very powerful in Montgomery still. They still hold a lot of control. You know, they give a lot of money to the Republican candidates now. They polled their teachers a few years ago and found out 75% of the teachers in the AEA were Republican. And they said, we've got to change our stripes. We've got to become more Republican and start working these Republican legislators, or we're not going to have any influence left in Montgomery. Well, that's worked. The AEA does have a lot of influence with the Republicans. Now, there are some Republicans who have refused to take their money. I'm one of them. I know Representative Danny Garrett, who's chairman of the ETF, returned a $10,000 check to the AEA this year. I thought that spoke volumes about him saying, hey, I'm not going to be controlled by the teachers unions. We're going to try to do what's right for the students. But we have to remember the teachers unions, they're not necessarily bad people, but they're there to represent teachers. Well, who's representing the children? Who's making sure the children get the best education possible? And the answer to that should be their legislator. And I hope that we'll see that come to fruition here in the 2023 session.
Representative, we always appreciate you coming on. Maybe we'll talk again one more time before the election, but if we don't, best of luck to you, and we could start calling you something different soon.
Appreciate that so much, Jeff. Good to come on.
Thanks. State Representative Andrew Sorrell there with us. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Forrest Show on FM Talk 106.5. When the dealing's done.
Every gambler knows